I love this song. I love this program.
I'm just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and jest, still the man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest.
You get the blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell. That's Bob Belts.
Good morning, Denver.
When I left my home and my family, I was no more than a boy.
This is another one of those songs we've got to get to the chorus on, Bo.
In the quiet of the railway,
it's called The Boxer, and it's a great song.
Laying low, seeking out the poor quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know.
All right. What year is this?
So long ago, I can't remember.
It's got to be the 60s, and that song is called The Boxer. Yeah. And You Get the Blessing is proud to have our first boxer here today. And our guest is Rob Frankel. Rob, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And how long have you been a boxer?
I've been a professional fighter since 2003.
So you don't just box, you do all this stuff.
I don't do MMA or UFC, but just boxing.
So you do just box?
Just box.
And what's your weight category?
My fighting as high as 148, which is welterweight. And now I'm at 140 and 135, which is lightweight and junior welterweight.
What's the best you've done? Any championships that we need to know about?
Yeah, I've acquired 3 titles in the 10 years that I've been fighting. NABA junior world title to the WBA at 135 pounds, the GBU an American title at 140 pounds, and the most distinguished title I've ever won was the WBC junior title, USNBC. It's a junior world title to the WBC, which is the green belt. That's the one every fighter wants to get.
So. Congratulations.
That's a lot more boxing titles than either of us have won.
I'm actually not much of a fighter, but... The few fights I got in, I normally got technical fouls because I was supposed to be playing basketball.
Oh, yeah. Fact, yeah, those aren't good fights.
Irv Brown gave me a technical foul one game in Missouri. I said, Irv, he was official, and I said, if this guy touches me again, I'm going to hit him. And Irv said, why don't you just play ball? Well, the guy kept poking me in the chest, and you can tell I probably didn't hit him very hard, but Irv still thought it deserved a technical foul. So, Irv, if you're listening today, I don't appreciate you doing that then, but you are forgiven. So, let's go back into your background, Rob. What we do on this program is we try to introduce guests whose lives, like yours, have sort of taken miraculous turns and are blessing so many other people now. So I want to get up to speed here where we are at the moment. But first, let's go back. Where were you born? Where were you raised? What was your life like as a kid?
I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico in 1980.
So you're actually younger than us.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't tell, but
yeah.
You know, I thought we're all on the same.
We're quite young looking for our age.
Yeah, but yeah, it was that I'm that young.
You are.
But I feel younger now than I did when I was 21, so.
Well, you good. Yeah. What was your family like?
It wasn't a very good home, but my mom was 14 when she had me. My dad was 19, so it was kind of messed up, you know, and I was the first dad of 5 kids.
A little too young for your parents to be tackling. Yeah. What
I'm thankful I'm here, but I'm kind of wishing they would have waited a while, but you know, that's some people are living that way, you know, and it actually carried out through my life too as a teen father. So
it did.
Yeah.
So what were some of the things that happened that you consider most memorable and most life-changing there in your teen years, your early 20s?
You know, going to a group home, stuff like that. I used to run away from home a lot. First time I ran away, I think it was 5 years old, I ran away from my house.
Just angry?
Just didn't feel safe. Just wanted to go away. So
So where'd you wind up?
I ended up on a hill about a block away from my house, next to some train tracks, sitting there.
Just stayed there a few hours?
Just sat there. My stepmother came by and talked to me and kind of humored me. You know, you want to go get a job, stuff like that. So there's a gas station across the street. We can go get you an application, stuff like that. So
got you back home.
Yeah, I came back home. You know, I didn't, you know, I don't know. I was young. I was 5 years old, and I felt like I needed to go. So, but after that, I ran away a few more times, you know, probably 7 or 8 more times. Until I finally didn't come back when I was about 14 years old, 13, 14.
And did you wind up in big trouble, or what did you do?
I didn't get in no big trouble. I ended up staying with my first two kids' mother. And I did get in trouble with the law, breaking the rules, doing stupid things. Started smoking some marijuana and cigarettes and all that, so...
So with no direction and not feeling very safe in your life, I would sort of say, why not? I mean, it's probably what any or all of us would have done.
Yeah. Why wouldn't I? Wasn't I safe?
I mean, yeah. Why not do that? I guess.
Oh, yeah. 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 That's just how I felt, you know. And, you know, I wasn't making right decisions anyways at home. But the way I was being taught and the way I was being treated, you know, probably didn't help either.
So did athletics and fighting and boxing become part of your life about then?
No.
Not for a while?
Not until my early 20s. I got put in group homes, ran away. You asked me what's one of the best memories or something that helped change my life. Going to a group home ran by Bob Cook. He was like a dad to me.
What town?
Lakewood. In Jefferson County. Okay. I lived there three times. The first time I stayed until I was done, until they allowed me to go back home. The second time I went back again. I ran away, but it wasn't because of the group home. And the third time I ran away, and it wasn't because of the group home. So, I mean, the man who ran the group home was somebody I looked up to. And into the early part of my boxing career, I was still visiting him. So
Bob, you are dealt different cards in life, and you take the hand you're dealt with and do the best you can. So here's a 5-year-old kid thinking, not safe, not right, and sensing, okay, danger, I'm going another direction. It's pretty common, isn't it?
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, I'm sure my environment was, you know, light years better than yours, but I do remember running away when I was about five,
nice.
You know, and, you know, you're heading down the street trying to figure out, now what do I do? But, you know, yeah, but, you know, it's, you were dealt a tough hand. There's no question about it. And, you know, you're really grateful for people like Bob that, you know, care enough to provide, you know, some sort of an environment for kids today, man, that, you know, the kind of issues they're dealing with and, you know, the danger of making bad choices. I think it's a lot scarier out there than it used to be.
Yeah, it is.
So was faith any part of your journey here at this point?
Right now?
Then.
Oh, then? Yeah. No, I wasn't raised in a church. I mean, I had gone to church as a kid and stuff, and we had gone doing some youth things as kids. And but never. My dad is a very he knows what he knows, you know, and nobody can tell him any different. He doesn't believe that there's a God, and you know, he never talked to us about it. I've never talked about religion with my father on any level. He's never told me anything about it, good or bad. So my stepmother. She tried getting us to go to church and stuff, but kind of faltered later. So now it's, I mean, growing up, it wasn't a big thing in our lives.
But so. At what point did Christ become real to you, and how did that part of your journey turn?
Well, I had already changed my life for the better. I was doing, I mean, when I was 16, I met meth. I'd already known marijuana. A little later on down the line, I met crack. I became a very bad drug user, and a full pack a day, maybe more cigarettes a day. And I was drinking, and just wasn't living right.
You've overcome it because you look great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I was, you know, if it weren't for my boxing career, and now I know God, you know.
No telling where you'd be.
God is with me. I would probably be dead or in prison.
So somebody pointed you to athletics and specifically boxing as the first maybe good thing that helped?
You know, that's where God comes in. Nobody pointed me to it. I was in a bar waiting for my drug dealer. And somebody came in and asked me if I wanted to buy tickets to a fight. And I do not know why I said it. Out of nowhere, I just came out and said, I don't want to buy tickets to a fight. I want to fight. And they looked at me like I was crazy and said, yeah, right. Everybody says that. Everybody thinks they're a fighter.
Yeah. It's like a Forrest Gump tale. Just thought, I can do that.
Yeah, I want to fight. They told me it was the Tuesday. Told me to be at the Ogden Theater on Thursday. Got there. I weighed in. I got in. I smoked a cigarette to the ring. Thought it was a joke. You know, I thought I was a tough guy. And we got to the ring, put out the cigarette, and put my gloves on. Got into the ring in my tennis shoes, swim trunks, and muscle shirt. I looked across the ring at a guy wearing boxing boots, boxing trunks, looking like somebody who knows what he's doing. I was like, I don't care, you know, whatever. These guys don't know nothing, you know. Went in there and started the bell ring, and 30 seconds later, I was done. I couldn't breathe. I was out of gas. It's like, wow.
Different than I thought.
Wow, this is way different than I thought.
Should have bought a ticket.
Yeah, I should have bought a ticket. But thankful I didn't buy a ticket because for some reason, you know, you'd think somebody would lose like that, and you know, I went back again, and I won. I did that 6 times after I lost, and I won the last 6, you know, and that was the end of my fight club career. That was like my amateurs. You know, it was non-sanctioned boxing, but it was like my amateur experience with 7 fights, and then I turned pro. That all happened in mid-2002 into late 2003.
So you just were good at it, and now somebody's helped you start training better?
I wouldn't say I was good at it. If you would have seen me go in there and try and box like a professional when I first started, you would have laughed or, you know, I was worse than most of the kids that come in the gym don't know a thing. So it was training. You know, I didn't have a natural – I wasn't like came in and knew what I was doing. I just – listened and worked hard every day, and through all that, you know, going to the gym and working on my talent, trying to get a talent, I quit smoking, I quit doing drugs, quit drinking on a regular basis, and just became an athlete, you know.
Wow.
So it really changed my life for the boxing, you know, part of that in a healthy way. So, and I haven't smoked a cigarette since. I think I tried to smoke a cigarette one time. It was a stressful part in my life. And I think I need to smoke. I took a drag and about died. My lungs were too, like, they were like, no way, buddy.
Not going to have it.
And I'm glad I did that because now I just can't stand them. So
you're listening to the voice of our friend Rob Frankel. He's a world champion boxer, and his story is quite amazing to get to that level. I was just sitting here thinking, from kindergarten through 12th grade, I went to 10 different schools.
Wow.
So when I tell other people, they like, were you dad in the military? Or are you getting kicked out of school? What was the problem? It was just circumstantial. We moved around Oklahoma City, then we moved to Houston, then we moved to Denver. And had I not had athletics, yeah, I'm not sure what I would have been doing either. But
yeah.
I'm glad to hear your story, and I'm glad that you can look back now. So you see God's hidden hand moving you. And
yeah,
even though maybe you didn't know, I'm gonna go to this place. I'm gonna box.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
truly believe that God had a hand in that because I think he wanted to save me because he knew. I mean, I've always been a good person, you know, just doing this, making wrong decisions.
So how'd you hook up with Jack and Colleen LaPietra?
Wow. That's a whole nother story, you know. After I changed my life, somehow, some way, I still ended up in prison. Growing up was hard for me. I got beat up and stuff. You know, I didn't have my dad. I still know him, and we talk here and there. But, you know, he was not very good to me as a child, you know. And
you don't seem to be bitter about that, though.
I'm not really bitter about it. I've, like, you know, me.
As a matter of fact, he wasn't real good to you.
Me and Colleen, we're talking today, you know. I've let go of it, you know. It's something that I need to let go of to be better in my life. Can't hold on to it forever. I've held on to it for too long, and I've moved on, you know. And it's all through the church with me on that. Everything that we do in the church and talk about has really helped me get past a lot of grudges, a lot of bitterness towards others. I love my dad, you know. He tried to do his best. He did what he knew how to do. You know, he had his tools that were given to him. And they may not have been the best, but they were something, you know. We always had a roof over our head. So, but
wound up in prison for how long?
I wound up in prison in 2008. I got charged with first degree assault, which was made second degree assault, kidnapping, criminal mischief, destruction of property, a lot of stuff.
Did you do it?
Yes, I did.
So you went and paid your time?
Well, I'm still paying for it. God was with me again, and I started seeing that because I got sentenced 10 years prison, which I was looking at 32, 10 to 32. I took a plea bargain for 2 to 18 probation eligible because I figured I had probation, never been in big trouble. But professional fighter, you know, after a fight that I had in San Jose, I fought Manny Pacquiao's brother, Bobby Pacquiao. And I beat him, came back into town, hadn't been drinking a lot, you know, but after my fights, I'd have some drinks. And I went out with some friends, me and my wife, who at the time I'd been married to about 2008. I think we just passed our 6th or 7th anniversary. Weren't getting along. You know, I wasn't being a good guy. I was cheating and having affairs and not really doing the right things. Letting everything go to my head about my boxing career that sprouted really good. I went out and had more drinks than I've had in a long, long, long time, and came home, woke them up, you know, had two friends come in, had a couple more drinks, and then woke her up, and she came out and said a few words to us, and I had them leave, and then my 3-year-old came out. She's 5 now, going to be 6.
You were mean to him.
I wasn't mean to her. I took her and put on Elmo and laid down with her. I went to sleep, and my wife, Crystal, went through my phone and seen that I had called another girl, and she got upset about it, and not sure how it happened. I know that she said something to me. You know, I know she was scared of me. I had a lot of fear put into her from my own anger, and I think she was trying to stay away from me and talk to me at the same time.
So it kind of escalated and went bad, well, and you wind up getting charged.
I don't know exactly. I just know that an animal came out of me that I've never known. And I hurt her.
Yeah.
And my kid, my 3-year-old, witnessed some of it. And when I realized what was done, I was scared. And I didn't know what to do, but yeah, it came to that. And anyways, thankfully she's still here, and I learned, you know, she was pregnant too with my youngest, who's still here, and I'm blessed to have her. She's a beautiful girl. And just, it was the devil inside of me that just came out.
And so you were sentenced to 10 years, even though...
DOC.
And then how'd you get out?
I was sentenced June 4th, 2009. and was released June 29th, 2010.
Wow.
The judge, I think, seen something in me, you know, even though what it was done was horrible. It was the worst thing ever. And she left the door open for me after she sentenced me, you know. I will allow you to file for a reconsideration. I filed for the reconsideration and sent in letters to her, and you know, and she granted me to come back to court, you know, and went back to court, and she changed my sentence from 10 years DOC to 10 years ISP, which I'm not on ISP anymore.
What's that stand for?
Intensive supervised probation, meaning check in every day, curfew, a lot of different stuff like that.
Wherever you move around town, you got
to... No, I didn't really have to call when I went anywhere. I just had to call at my curfew time. I'm in for the night. You let them know I'm in for the night. And that was it. Sometimes they would stop in and check and make sure I was there.
Interesting, Bob, how in our own lives, just for a broader audience here, that we make mistakes. We know we've done stuff wrong. We have a loving God that's there to forgive us, but we also have a throne occupied in heaven, as you always refer to, that someday God will be a judge, and he is a loving judge as well, but he's also going to say, oops, right or wrong, but we don't think about Christ, God, the judge much, do we?
Well, I'm really glad that, you know, that we don't have to face that without what Jesus did, because we'd all be, you know, we'd all be up a creek, obviously, and graciously, you know, since we've all sinned and fall short of the glory of God, as Scripture says, you know, we would, you know, we desperately need what Jesus provided. So now that it's like the judge is like our father now, and not only a father, but he's already paid the price for what we've done. So to reject that is, you know, insane, I guess, on the one hand. And, you know, but to realize that, you know, that our forgiveness is really based in what Christ has done for us, and it's a free gift. And again, it's kind of like the judge sentencing us and then saying, hey, by the way, I'm going to go serve your sentence for you.
Yeah. And so thank God you are where you are, and you're in church with Lepetras.
Yeah, that's kind of how I got there, you know, through that year in prison and feeling, you know, I didn't know whether I was going to be granted a reconsideration, but through all that, I seen some stuff happen while I was in there, blessed with the job that I wasn't supposed to have in there, cutting hair, blessed with a free phone call by my case manager to my older two kids. I hadn't talked to him in a few months. I didn't talk to him since the night before I got to see them before I went to court. And
series of good things.
Yeah, just all kinds of good things. And then, you know, all the way up to the reconsideration, the cards were stacked against me. I broke a restraining order while I was in there, calling my other two kids. The judge knew about it. There was a stack of papers, you know, showing that. And the judge still granted it. You know, that was a no-no, what I did in there. You know, I was doing good things. I was doing my class. I was going to classes. I was taking extra classes. I was doing all kinds of stuff. But I just needed to talk to my kids. And the DA, who didn't like me, took great favor on me. I mean, she actually asked them to deny it, but she didn't argue with me about anything. It just came to be. And then I got an apartment after a while out, and the apartment was a block away from Jack's church. Was walking down the street on a Sunday and looked at it and said, you know, I think I'll go in there and see what it's like. And, man, first I was kind of thrown off because it was a bunch of crazy people. But
crazy in the sense they were hugging and singing and being happier.
Yeah, you know, just, you know, it looked like a gang member was hugging a doctor, you know, and a doctor was, you know, picking up everybody's kids. And, you know, it was just...
And they were glad to have a nutcase boxer come in.
And then they seen the nutcase boxer, and they all grabbed a hold of me and just kind of helped me mature. And Jack and his wife are very good people. They've adopted me.
Good.
Which is fine by me.
How old are you now?
32.
32. Oh yeah, born.
That's because he's born in 80s.
Yeah, sorry.
I just turned 32 last week.
We got to wrap this up, but just tell me, boxing wise, what's next for you?
Oh, I was blessed. You know, I told the judge, I don't know if when she granted my reconsideration, I don't know if I'll ever fight again. But if I do, I'll be sure and keep that in the ring. You know, and I've started fighting again. My career is reached more than where it was at. I won a WBC Junior World Title. Although I did defend it and lose it when I was defending it. But we're still up there. I got a fight coming up August 3rd in Vegas. It'll be televised. So
we're going to go out there. We're going to not drink. And in the name of Jesus, we're going to knock somebody's head off.
Yes.
Well, you're a great story, Rob. And I hope people gain hope from what's been said here.
Yeah, and it's always great just to be with you, and you know, you can see the Lord's little twinkle in your eye, and which is a good thing. And
well, you know, I'm still working through some struggles though too, man.
Well, we all are.
Yeah,
so hang in there with Jack and Colleen. And
oh yeah,
you're doing great, man.
I appreciate you guys having me on. I really do, man. This is a blessing to me, and
well, it'll
I was
be
excited
a blessing
to be here.
The people that get to hear you, we promise.
Quite a story. We'll see you folks again here next week on You Get the Blessing.
When I left my home and my family, I was no more than a boy in the company of strangers, in the quiet of the railway station, running scared. Laying low, seeking out the poorer quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they were.